You're listening to CPA Review and More with your hosts, Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review and Mansoor Farhat of the YouTube channel Farhat's Accounting Lectures. In this episode, they interview Miles Anthony Smith, author of Why Leadership Sucks and Digital Marketer. He talks about, in depth, the benefits of working remotely. He also goes into a little bit of the background of his book, Why Leadership Sucks.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager with Yeager CPA Review, and I'm here today with my co-host, my partner in crime, Mansoor Farhat. And Mansoor, once again, tell him what you do.
Well, good morning, good evening, everyone, wherever you are listening to this. My name is Mansoor Farhat. I'm the owner and founder of YouTube Accounting Lectures. I have over 1,500 YouTube lectures free for accounting students as well as CPA candidate. With my partner in crime, Phil Yeager, we help candidates pass the CPA exam. That's what we do for a living. And today we have a very interesting host. He's going to be telling us, he's going to be sharing with you advices about career and various business majors. So hopefully it will be very helpful and give you a different view of the business world.
So, all right, we will start asking Miles. We're going to put Miles, we have the light on him right now. Miles, you see that light? All right.
And I'm sweating already.
All right, he's sweating already. We won't ask you where you were on the night of so-and-so. All right. But for those who are not familiar with Miles, he currently works as a marketing agency digital marketing director. So he does search optimization, marketing. But it's interesting. His background, he earned a Bachelor of Music degree from Oral Roberts University. And Miles, am I correct? Your area is being you play the violin?
I do. I did, and I have since I was the age of 6.
And you continue to play, correct?
I do, and I actually play violin and viola both.
So, if any of you want to book Miles at a wedding,
or bar mitzvah,
give us a call. We'll put you in touch with him. But he holds a master's degree, an MBA, all right, from, let me get this right this time, Oklahoma State University.
Correct. Go now, Cowboys. Go Pokes.
How'd they do today? How'd they do this year, Miles?
Football team. And then basketball this year. They're not very good. So,
I'm sorry. How'd they do in football?
They did okay, but
okay. All right. All right. Well, the areas we're going to discuss with Miles today is, first of all right, working remotely. That's something which might be of interest to people who are accounting majors, or if you're not in accounting, a lot of jobs today, people are working remotely, all right? Why? It saves time with commuting, saves time with gasoline. And then the question is, all right, if people are working remotely, Miles, all right, do they do less work even though they're not being supervised? What do you say, Miles?
Actually, the study shows just the opposite. People end up working 20 to 30% more hours than they work in an office. So they end up. One of the challenges is overworking when you're at home. You might think that you would get distracted if you're working at home, or let's say in a co-working office or something, but. Because we're always on, especially with technology, you talk about digital, our phones, our smartphones, and as well as our laptops are portable. Our smartwatches will show us a text message or an email or something and so we might be sitting on the couch at 8 o'clock at night watching some show on TV and realize, oh crap, I should probably answer that when, 10 years ago or 15 years ago when this wasn't even possible, you had a physical separation, a real demarcation in terms of what your work life and your personal life. Now it's all blended. So even though you might be distracted during the day, you end up making up and exceeding more hours generally in the evenings and weekends.
What I wanted to ask you was, what percentage of employers are now, do you know this? I don't know if you have the statistic. What percentage of employers are actually having their employees work remotely. And how does that compare to, say, the last 5 years?
Well, it's definitely increasing. I don't have the I do. I just looked here. In 2016, there was a study done, and 43% of workers have at least worked remotely part-time. So that trend is only accelerating in the recent years. So it depends on whether you're talking about do employees do it some of the time or all the time. And I would say that I don't know that precise number, but my guess is it's north of 50% now have at least done it at some point, you know, during a given year or month. So like with my situation with Imaginasium, is the marketing agency I work for. I mean, all of my work is done online. Now I do meet with people, but a lot of those, we have clients that are not just in Wisconsin, they're all over the country. So, you know, we have go to meetings and, you know, you do screen share and all that good stuff and have a conversation and actually be able to show and demonstrate some stuff visually as well. So it's going to become more of a trend. And to your audience, people who are getting into the accounting field, wanting to become a CPA, that's a world where, you know, that stuff can happen online and through the power of Skype or GoToMeeting or any of those ways where you can connect with your clients. So I see that as an opportunity and a challenge. It's also the challenge is staying connected to people, to the people side of things from a physical standpoint when more and more of our communication is all electronic. So that's kind of the personal side of things.
I agree with you, especially in the accounting field, because when I was practicing, I remember several times, maybe a couple times, we had really bad snowstorm. So I was able to work from home. I downloaded the software UltraTax that we use at the office, and I work on few individual tax return. I know the CPA firm now that I used to work with, they do allow employees to do so now on a regular basis. So it is changing, as you said. When I was there, it was just in quote emergencies, like snow emergencies, you could do it. So that's the trend. Also, my wife worked with J&J, and they're pretty flexible, but it all depends also on the manager, the philosophy of the manager that supervise you. And believe it or not, age play a big role in this. Maybe you can talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, I would say age to some extent, and some of that's just your perspective. So I've known, you know, people who are in their, you know, in their later years of their career in the 60s and 70s who are very digitally savvy and they, you know, love this, not only working themselves remotely, but having a team. So it really depends on your, I think, more what you're used to and also the mix of employees or the percentage of your overall workforce that's remote working. So as an example, I worked for a company based out of Austin, Texas for about a year, totally remotely from here in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it was very challenging because everybody else, 99% of the workers worked at the physical location in Austin. So remote workers often feel very left out of the inter-office chat, which can, you know, some of that's just the personal side, but some of that you miss some of the vital, important business information that's getting transmitted just in interoffice chat physically. And so when you're remote, that becomes a challenge, especially if you're in the minority.
Absolutely.
So companies having, you know, a good blend of in-office and remote workers, there can be better understanding because there's more of them that have to deal with those challenges.
So, Miles, I just pulled up a statistic, and it's actually kind of interesting. It showed that in 2016, there were only about 25% of people that were actually working from home remote one day a week. That is now skyrocketed to between 24 and 31% working 4 to 5 days a week, and actually the remote workers earning up to 40% more than their office-based co-partners. What's your take on that?
Yeah, what I think is driving that is because of the more productivity from working from home. Employers are valuing that. And frankly, there, I mean, some of the positives to working remotely, you have less distractions, less, you know, inter-office politics and gossip. And that can work both ways because, again, people could be plotting against you and you're not there to pick up on some of that. And that's at the extreme end, you know, negative end of things. But when you're working remotely, you know, you might have calls, but like you get on the call, you figure out what you need to do, and then you go do it, and you're not sucked into as many, you know, off-the-cuff conversations, personal or business, that interrupt that flow of getting project work done.
Which, I believe you are more focused at work when you are away from work. It's ironic, but it is true.
Yeah. Totally agree. And when I worked 100% remote, I had people ask me, well, aren't you distracted? Because I work some from home. And then after a couple of months of that, I had to find a co-working space where I could go into and like talk to some other people that, you know, are in the same boat and have some, you know, some personal slash business interaction. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here.
You're talking about the place you work in remote, you were going to a place. It wasn't like an executive office space.
It's more, yeah, just a co-working space where you have like a common area and you got internet and that sort of thing. But, oh, I remember what I was going to say. So people asked me, you know, that knew me and knew I made this transition from being most of my career in an office with my team. You know, aren't you get distracted? You know, how do you stay productive and get stuff done? And part of it is I've always been very self-motivated. So you generally have an issue with, you know, forcing myself to work and getting stuff done. I just know how to do that. So I never had an issue with, you know, or as much of an issue as I think some people do with getting distracted. I think those other distractions are gone and I got to get my work done. And ultimately my boss is going to hold me accountable for that. So I can just focus and get it done.
It takes a certain amount of maturity level, professional maturity level, in order to be productive. You have to buy into the process, take ownership of your work. Yeah. It's not for everyone, but eventually it will be the norm, in my opinion. In 10 to 15 years, that will be the norm.
I agree.
Because the nature of the work, too. The nature of the work is no longer repetitive.
Mansoor, I can see people who work in a CPA firm, the tax returns. Yeah, you can do that off-site. But I'm trying to think, with the functions for an audit, audits, you know, the grunt work is usually, I'm going to use the word grunt.
Yes, that's different. You have to be on-site.
Yeah, you have to be on-site. But
maybe when you do your paperwork, maybe you can do it, you know, using the software at your own, you know, office, home office, for example, doing the paperwork.
Yeah, because I know a friend of ours, well, my daughter's friend is a partner in a firm, and she says she really doesn't have to go in. She can do everything from her home offsite. And that's good because her commute is 1 hour one way. So she's saving 2 hours a day. And besides that, she's not getting burnt out from the commuting. So, you know, there's definite advantages.
That plays a big role.
Yeah.
It does. And when I went from, I had about an hour commute as well in my previous job before I took that remote working job. And it, I mean, you think about it, that's 2 hours in your day. That's a huge chunk of time that you can either spend some additional work hours or free up some personal time. So that's it. That's a huge benefit. And to your point, Phil, about people still needing to like meet with clients, like we do that in the marketing agency world. Absolutely. You still have to, in some cases, go for us, a discovery session or like you guys, an audit. You have to go on site. But more of that work, the percentage of the work that we do in a given week, more that's going to get pushed to remote and not have as much of a need for an office space anymore. You know, it's still always going
to
be there.
Save rents. It'll save rents to the companies. Correct?
Yep.
They'll pass those additional reduction of costs as profits to the employees. Can I count on that?
Yeah, I don't know about that. And I'll say this too, there's winners and losers in this digital age. So as, you know, less office space is needed. Now, there's other factors that might offset some of that. But if zero-sum game, you know, that's going to cause problems in the commercial rental property leasing space because businesses don't need as much. They'll still need some. You still need a physical hub.
I see
hub.
It creating a lot of unemployment, right?
Yeah, and that... Yeah, that's
well, with the commercial properties,
there.
You know. You don't need the people to maintain the buildings if they're not using the office spaces anymore. I mean, that's sort of like one of the big areas is artificial intelligence now in the accounting finance area. And however you put it, there are certain functions, I guess, that robots can do in the accounting area. But it's going to create unemployment for a lot of accountants.
For those who don't, and I would say this is true for CPAs and as well as other fields, for those who don't adapt their skills to something that either their computers can't do or it's too complex, or you need a personal touch of a physical person. So I'm not a big believer that AI is going to take over everything and there's going to be massive unemployment. I think there are going to be winners and losers in terms of unemployment, employment. Don't get me wrong. There will be people that will be pushed out, especially the people who are, lesser skilled people. That's going to be challenging. But the advice I would give to your listeners is build adaptable skills. Continually improve them to stuff that cannot be automated or it's hard to automate or needs some sort of personal touch where you have that connection with your client. And that personal relationship is still going to be important. So the more we can align ourselves with that and with to stay ahead of where technology is automating things and move towards where it can't be, or isn't yet, that's where we're gonna have to go to be successful.
Do you think over the next 5 years, maybe the lack of interpersonal skills that people have today because of the internet, do you think that'll ever come back where, people will have more, interpersonal skills versus the way it is? People have less of it today because of the internet. Do you see that ever coming back the way it was to some extent?
I do. I don't know how long that time horizon is, whether that'll take another generation or two. But I think it may not be a severe backlash, but I think that pendulum will swing back the other way. Because at the end of the day, technology is great, but humans still have to run the technology and humans still have to have the relationships of business that make things work. And the reality is we still have a strong need that's built inside all of us for that personal and professional relationship. And that's, I think, only going to matter more, not less, as technology continues to grow.
Do you, are you involved in the area of artificial intelligence?
Not as much specifically. I'm definitely monitoring it as it relates to marketing and career. But I think, there's other things too, not just artificial intelligence that are going to challenge careers in the future. And one of those is just outsourcing. So I'll give an example. We, in terms of remote workers, we do subcontracting of some of the marketing work, especially some of the lower skilled types of work. And we use sites like Upwork with, people in the Philippines. And so that wage difference between different countries and here, you can still find, quality skilled workers for certain types of work in other countries. Now, I'm not a big fan of that for web development and like some more complex stuff, but for stuff like data research and data mining that needs a lower wage worker, that's just another example of how not just AI,
changing.
The landscape is changing. And I'll give you a specific example. So I use people in the Philippines on Upwork, and they make $5 to $7 an hour. That would cost me to do the, you know, I'd say $20 or more an hour here in the States. And I get somebody to basically take a spreadsheet of data of target prospects and marry that up with email addresses through some automated software and some manual processes. And I get that done at a fraction of the cost that I could ever do that here in the States.
I agree. I do the same thing, Miles. I use Fiverr, not Upwork. I use Fiverr for example, animation videos for my YouTube or if I want to do a design. Yes, and it's a fraction of the cost. I mean, the quality, you know, hit or miss sometime, but the price is very reasonable. I agree. Now, talking about careers and career advice, I like your books. I know you wrote several books, but what I like most about your books is your titles, and you use the word sucks in them constantly. So I'm going to ask you to maybe, in a nutshell, summarize for us. I know this is going to be difficult, but what would you say if you want to summarize your book, Why Career Advice Sucks?
Yeah. I'll try to summarize that as briefly as possible.
Yes, yes.
As we've all moved into this digital age at different points in our career, you know, some of us are millennials, some of us are Generation X as I am, and some of us are baby boomers. As we moved in the digital age, especially those who are millennials and younger who really, and even Generation X to some extent, the trailing edge of Generation X, you know, launched our careers at the time of the digital age, we found lots of change and really the implied promises that we thought we were getting from a degree, you know, most of us got a bachelor's degree from some university, you know, of a good job, of decent pay, a lot of those promises were broken because of the tectonic shift that is changing. And the sad part is that that career advice that we were getting from either our parents or our career counselors in high school or college was old school. And it was not and still isn't keeping up with the times. So the book that I wrote is my manifesto to try to help illuminate a way that you need to go and where you need to focus. And a couple of those things are building adaptable skills. So for me in my career, I've had a varied career. I've worked in for-profit, nonprofit, mostly small business or a department of a larger business. So I've managed 2 to 5 million in annual revenues most of my career until I've shifted more into the marketing sector. So I've worked in a lot of different industries, which is very, I think, pretty unique or somewhat unique. And I think the idea of specialization in one specific area only, even for your audience in the CPA world, is somewhat dangerous. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be a CPA or you shouldn't just do accounting, but you need to be mindful of building some other skills or other income streams. So for me, I have a day job. I work for a marketing agency. I've written books, so I have consistent monthly income that I get from royalties on my book sales. I do some speaking, and then I also do some other consulting on the side. So I have, and this has taken me years, so this isn't going to happen overnight, but we have to begin to think of ourselves as more than or our career and our income is more than just
employees.
A job. Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And yes, I believe also in scalable work. For example, just give you an example, my YouTube is scalable. In other words, once I have a recording out there, that's it. I can benefit hundreds of thousands or millions of people, yeah, if need be. Why? Because it's a scalable. And with technology, most of the careers can be scalable. I mean, YouTube is a great way to scale any type of business you are in. I'm pretty sure you use YouTube for your own business. Another book that you have is Why Leadership Sucks. That's more interesting. Could you tell us a little bit more about this? Because yes, in colleges and universities, they make a big deal out of leadership classes, management classes. And I know most of it, in my opinion, it's not relevant to the real world because professors, they may not have a real world experience. They teach the course, but they're not really into a leadership position. So could you talk a little bit more about this book?
Yeah, I just want a little sidebar and then I'll answer your question. You talk about professors because I think it's important to your audience. I am a big believer in formal education. I have 2 degrees. I invite, you know, I've got a 16-year-old, my oldest, who's heading in that direction, probably going to go to college. So I firmly believe in that. That said, the most information you're going to learn is not from your formal education, and it's going to be not driven by your employer. It's going to be your own. You're going to have to take the reins on that. You're going to have to find and look for practitioners who have case study data. This is what I do and how I've learned a ton in marketing is I ignore all the talking heads that have great titles and work for great companies unless they have case study data and they're practitioners in their field. So that's the danger I see, twofold danger in higher education is assuming that that's going to give you everything you need, one, and two, not understanding that many of those, not all of those professors are, they're not practitioners currently, or they haven't been in 10 or 15 or 20 years. And with the world changing, that's a real challenge. So now that I'll get that off my soapbox, I'll answer your question. Why leadership sucks. I wrote that based on the challenges that I went through having been given a significant leadership opportunity in my early 20s. And I really learned the hard way and had to learn some challenges through some challenging experiences. Ultimately, why leadership sucks is because it's hard. It's lonely at the top. The buck stops here. You, at the end of the day, when the chips are down, it's your butt on the line as a leader, not your team's. And you get to take all of the blame and give away all the credit to your team, as I think it should be. So I really believe the only way to successful leadership is through servant leadership. And that's the theory and purpose of leadership that I espouse and try to live out daily in my life. Not one of weakness, but one of choosing to serve. That doesn't mean that we don't deal with issues and don't have to, you know, work on corrective actions with people that work for us. But the way in which we do that, being direct doesn't have to be mean. And we don't have to be jerks and a-holes about it to successfully lead. And in fact, the younger generations not only want this kind of leadership, they're demanding it. And if you follow the old school kind of dictatorial top down, my way or the highway, you're going to find yourself out of a job in the near future because that just doesn't work with millennials and even to some extent Generation X. Although Generation X kind of bridges that gap between the boomers and the millennials.
I believe that technology also plays a part in this as well. It's just breaking those lines between employees, mid-level managers, and top-level managers.
Very true.
Miles, as we are running out of time here, I saw a quote you made, and if you could just elaborate on it a little. It says, your mission in life is to, one, chart the course, pave the pathway, and light the lane for others to eclipse my own success in leadership. All right? I know you know what I just said, but what does that mean?
So for me, I feel that the challenges that I've been through in my life, I do feel like an old soul. I feel like I've lived a lot of life more than just my years, how old that I am. And I want to share those experiences with other people. So I feel that part of my mission in life is to go through those challenges. And as I experience those challenges in my leadership, in my career, the marketing aspect of things, I have a deep desire to share those with other people. So either A, they don't make the same mistakes that I did, or they can just go further, faster in their career. Make no mistake, I'm a very ambitious person. I have lots of goals and dreams and plans, and even so far in my career, I've accomplished quite a lot. But I even more want to take those experiences and life lessons and the wisdom that have come out of those, even through many painful challenges at times, and share those with others so that they can exceed even the things that I've done. So that's part of what's driven me to write the books.
If I have to summarize it, it's basically taken a failure and turned it into an opportunity, I'm assuming that's what you are basically saying, by sharing that failure with others. Interesting. Yes, I believe
failures and successes. And
yes, of course, both failure and successes, but I believe we learn more from our failures.
Absolutely.
Well, Miles, before we leave today, I'd like to just give a plug for you, for your books. I just want you to know, one of the books is Why Leadership Sucks, The Pain, the Pitfalls, and the Challenges of Servant Leadership Fundamentals. Also, Why Career Advice Sucks. And it says, join the generation flux and build a what? What is that word, Miles? Do you know what it says on the front?
An adaptable, flexible career.
Adaptable, flexible, blah, blah, blah. All right. But anyway, is there another book that I'm not mentioning?
Those are the two titles. So Why Leadership Sucks has two parts. So part is two books to Why Leadership Sucks. I had so much to say. I wrote two books. Instead of just one, it's a series.
And you're writing another one? Is that what you said?
I'm writing several others. So Why Forgiveness Sucks and Why Success Sucks. Those are two.
Just remember, Miles is called the sucks person. Okay.
All right. Why stuff sucks.
Why life sucks. That's really what it comes down to. But no, you can get these from where, Miles?
So you can get the ebook, paperback, or even audiobook. Audiobook on Audible or iTunes and all the others, Amazon, Nook, iTunes, Kobo, all of that.
So if this sounds interesting to you, hey, doesn't hurt to look at it, you know? You might even learn something. So anyway, Miles, thank you so much. I found it very interesting. And I hope the people listen to this and I'm sure they found it interesting. I'm not going to say, hopefully they found it. I'm sure they did find it interesting. And once again, I want to thank Mansoor for the excellent questions that he always has. Don't forget to go to Mansoor's YouTube channel, because we all know, and I'll say this, and this is my quote, all right? A lot of times in college, you don't have the best teaching. So therefore, all right, there's nothing wrong with saying, well, wait a minute, I don't understand this subject, that subject. Well, if you don't understand that, go to Mansoor's site on YouTube and you can watch a videotape on that subject. So don't feel like there's no place to go. And also, I know Mansoor, also, if you have any questions about the subject itself, you can always reach him.
Absolutely.
And Mansoor, once again, where do they reach you if they want to reach you?
Through my email, or I always also give my phone number, 484-243-0241. They can call or text me or through my YouTube. Just Google Farhat Lectures, which is my last name, F as in Frank, A-R-H-A-T. My YouTube and my website would come up.
And should you need a CPA review school, if you're taking the CPA exam, 85% of people use review courses. And, you know, look into the courses. They're not all the same, all right? Go to our site, JaegerCPAReview.com, and that's all I'll say about us. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to these podcasts. If you have any comments or you want to hear a specific subject, please let us know. And, Rob, how can they let you know about that?
If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, you can reach us at our Facebook page, Jaeger CPA Review, or send them directly to me at the studio. Our email address here is podcast@JaegerCPAReview.com. That again is podcast@JaegerCPAReview.com. We'll also have that email address and our web link in the description below.
So anyway, everyone, Miles, Mansoor, Rob, thank you again, and have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time. Well, I keep saying we'll see you, but we're not going to see. Are we ever going to see the people or see us? I don't think so.
No,
that's not going to happen, okay? But anyway, we hope to speak to you again, and please listen to our podcast. We will mention what the subjects are. We're trying to get interesting speakers such as Miles, and we'll continue to seek those people out.
Thanks again for listening to CPA Review and More with Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review and Mansoor Farhat of the YouTube channel Farhat's Accounting Lectures. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about the CPA exam, check out the Yeager website at YeagerCPAReview.com or at the Yeager CPA Review Facebook page. Don't forget to use promo code 15CPA at checkout to take advantage of 15% off your purchase of this Yeager CPA Review course through their website. This promo code is available through February 25th, 2019. If you haven't already done so, please like and subscribe to the podcast to receive notifications when we have new episodes available, and spread the word by sharing it on social media for those of you who may have anyone interested in the podcast. You can now listen to CPA Review and More at Spreaker.com or through the Apple iTunes podcast app and Spotify. Until next time, take care.